is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida. If you're visiting from out of town, all you snowbirds and Canadians, you must take a trip downtown to downtown St. Petersburg, where you will find the best bookstore in Florida, Haslam's Books. Now, they have over 300,000 titles, and I'm sure you'll find something that you will enjoy. To take and read next to the pool or on the beach. And Haslam's also has a wonderful section of the latest books for you to read and for you to really enjoy. I was really thrilled. I went to visit them just before Christmas, and they just, the amazing quantity of books and the variety is so much fun to spend a couple hours there going through the books. And there are lots of nice little restaurants nearby. So pick up a book from Haslam's and then go and enjoy a nice cup of coffee and read. And if you're in town in January, Haslam's always is having events. And one of the events that they're having on Saturday, January 30th, is they're having best-selling author Tim Dorsey in town. Now, Tim Dorsey, if you haven't read his books, they are slapstick crime adventures. They're very funny. His new book is called Coconut Cowboy, and it's the 19th, actually, I think, in his series of Surge and Coleman, who are always on an adventure and always land up in some kind of a hilarious crime. And it's a fun book, and I hope that you'll take the opportunity to pick up the book when you get there and enjoy it. Now, meanwhile, I have in the studio with me today an author, and we don't normally have an author who brings along the subject of his books. And so it's very exciting for me to welcome James McGee, who has written a book called I Know Stuff, Don't Ask, I'll Tell. Hi, Jim, it's nice to see you.
Thank you for having me here.
Oh, well, it's really interesting what you've been doing. I know this is your 30—you're working now on your 31st book, right?
Yeah.
And this book that you wrote called I Know Stuff is a book about the stories that you've captured from a cab driver. And we have the cab driver with us. So it's so nice to welcome you, and I just want to say— what do we call you?
Charlie.
Charlie. Good Time Charlie. Yeah. That's what he's called. So Good Time Charlie is the subject, and it's a fascinating story how Jim ran into him and started picking his brain for great stories.
Well, he was my next door neighbor for 7 years, and we used to meet across the way from our apartment complex in a club bar called the Commodore International Yacht Club, and he was telling me stories for a couple of years, and I'm a writer.
You said, "What the heck? I might as well put this down on paper."
Right.
So, were you excited when Jim told you he was going to write all your stories down?
Oh, absolutely! I didn't expect it. I thought he was just kidding with me, and he sure did a great job of it too.
So, it makes you famous. So that's nice. Now you can go around with a book and say, "Ha! I'm the subject of a book." That's fantastic. Now, the stories, of course, are centered around your life as a cab driver in quite a few different cities.
Yes.
What cities were you a cab driver?
In Cleveland, Ohio, Las Vegas, Nevada, of course. Los Angeles County and Orange County, California, and down here in right here in the Clearwater area in Pinellas County, Florida.
So, Jim, when you started the book, did you realize that you he had enough stories to fill a whole book?
Yeah, he's met quite a few celebrities.
Uh-huh. And so that was the basis of all of the stories that. That Charlie's picked up about his encounters with various celebrities. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, Jim, I think this is so wonderful. I know that you are you have a bachelor's degree in philosophy and psychology, right, from St. Francis College?
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And, of course, Seton Hall, you got a master's
in education. School of Education.
So it's lovely that when you retire, you decided to...
That's when I started getting into writing. It's been fun. It's an avocation, not a vocation.
It's a wonderful thing to do. It's really always the best advice. Never actually stop working. You might retire from one job, but always find another job to something to keep you busy and something to keep your mind busy.
Creative outlet.
Exactly. And you've done that. And now, before we get into the stories from Charlie, I just want to mention that you have a website called Lit Trivia, because many of your books are about trivia that you've taken and made into an interesting...
I covered areas like literature, law, humor, fiction, history, philosophy, music, art, psychology, and geography.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that now. Your book, which, by the way, has a lovely cover, so anybody who goes online, it's available online, and we'll give you the information.
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, and, of course, your website. It's a beautiful cover. It captures Charlie so nicely, a wonderful cab driver. So do you have the disclaimer to the book that you wanted to read us?
Yeah, this is it's a humorous kind of a disclaimer. It says, for the record, the names of the guilty have not been changed to protect them. The stories are true. Be advised, the statute of limitations has been thoroughly researched by our research department. They have burned the midnight oil. Don't forget, it's not what's in your head. It's not what's in your heart. But it's all about not getting caught.
Well, that's great. You know, you have really captured some of the most interesting celebrities of all time. And having come from, been raised in Detroit, I'm actually from Northern Michigan, but I was raised in Detroit, of course, Motown. And so I love stories about Motown and about different characters from Motown. So tell us a little bit about Don King.
Oh, Don King. Well, I knew him from Cleveland. We lived just a few streets away from one another.
Uh-huh.
And back in the day, Don King had a little business going on in Cleveland, and he used to sell these kind of like bingo tickets and things like this. And that's how I met him. And he was also, of course, he's a great boxing promoter,
yeah.
And I did have a friend of mine who was in the Golden Gloves that I introduced him to Don King, and Don King actually did remember him, and he was going to make a professional boxer out of him, but it didn't come to fruition because we had some problems, as is in the book. I even had a fight lined up with him, Madison Square Garden, but the guy who was supposed to fight claimed he got the flu. And I think he was just scared of my guy, Tony Rossi was his name. And Don wanted him to spar with Michael Dukes, who was as big as a bear. I wouldn't let him go in the ring to spar with Michael Dukes, but I did have him a fight lined up, and... You know, he did spar, and he was at actually Roberto Duran's training camp in near downtown Cleveland.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we get the boxing thing going on.
Oh, wow. Now, when you met him, did you right away realize what he was going to become, how very important in the business?
Actually, I did. I did.
He had that persona?
Oh, yes. I absolutely. And... he was well known in Cleveland, you know,
uh-huh.
Because like I say, he was in various businesses, which I really won't say on air what he did. So he was, let's put it this way, that they called Don King the goose that lays the golden egg.
Well, I remember hearing a lot about him in the old days, and of course when he what was his biggest fight that he arranged?
It was Muhammad Ali,
yeah.
Sonny Liston,
yeah.
and
I remember
Joe Frazier, yeah. And Muhammad Ali, and Yeah, wow.
So it was fantastic to meet him. Now, when you, was that about the same time that you met Jimmy the Greek?
No, Jimmy the Greek was, I was only just about, I think around 11 years old when I met Jimmy the Greek. It was at my neighbor's house.
Ah.
He was a friend of my neighbor's father. And I just happened to be over there, and Jimmy the Greek taught us how to make a Las Vegas football line, how to make, you know, odds making. So I learned odds making when I was 11 years old from Jimmy the Greek.
Well, that's always something good to know. So Jim, when you were capturing these stories at the club, it must have been over a few nice drinks. So it was. It was lots of fun to hear all of this,
yeah.
Huh?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine, and he said, oh, well, good time Charlie was probably going to tell you met John Wayne, too. And I said, yeah. I asked Charlie, and he said, yeah.
Yeah.
I had him in the back of my cab.
Ah, well, that's nice.
Yeah, it sure did.
Was he, John Wayne, I think, has always been one of my favorite actors, and
really?
I love his old movies, and... was he as big in real life as he is on screen?
Yes, he was.
He sort of must fill the back of your cab.
Yeah, he's a big man.
And they named that airport after him, right?
Yeah, that's Orange County Airport is actually called John Wayne Orange County Airport.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
They have a big statue of him.
Yeah, they have a big bronze statue of him, you know, as a cowboy with... guns and holsters and a cowboy hat on, and as the entrance to the airport.
And a nice guy?
Oh, a great fella. When I did pick him up at the airport, one of his places he had near Newport Beach in Costa Mesa, I'm driving into his driveway, and I saw this old beat-up station wagon on the driveway, and I said, Mr. Wayne, is that your car? And he said, yeah, you got a problem with that? And I said, no, sir. I, and then I looked in my rearview mirror, and he cracked a big smile. Just, you know, tapped me on the shoulders. Yeah, that's my car. It was funny because here's John Wayne. He's got an old beat-up, rusted station wagon.
Well, at least he could get around town without people bothering him too much.
Absolutely.
Was he a good tipper?
Well, yeah, I remember that he gave me the fare, and he tipped me like $10 at that time. It was great.
It was great. Well, I've always found that the nicest people, the most famous people are so often the nicest. Like when I'm interviewing famous writers, and I've interviewed, you know, so many famous best-selling authors, and it's amazing. The ones who are really the most famous are usually the ones who immediately will send me a thank you note thanking me, you know, to be on my program, send me their signed autographed books. So I've always found that, you know, that they're very generous people. When, you know, so often people will say, oh, they're so famous they don't think of anybody, but that's not really true. I've found it the exact opposite, that the most famous authors I've had on have always been the most thoughtful, the most giving, and also the most cheerful. So, but it's really great. So when you were in where John Wayne was, where you were in what
in California?
In California. That's when you were in California.
Yes, Los Angeles County and Orange County,
yeah.
California.
So there you got a lot of chance to pick up famous people.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, and of course, in those days, paparazzi weren't quite the problem that they are today. It's really hard for actors today really can't call a cab. I mean, it would be unheard of now because there's so much paparazzi,
they watch them just leaving their home to go to the store or something. They have to, you know, have personal assistance to do so much for them because they can't even leave their house sometimes, you know.
Exactly, and of course, now in those days they didn't have you didn't have cell phones, so you couldn't take selfies, so you never got photos of the people that you took, which is funny. Also, I remember when there was a stage in my life where I was also around a lot of you know, actors and people like that, and it never occurred to me to take pictures of myself with them, you know. But of course, nowadays people are taking selfies all the time with everything. So, but in a way, it's a shame that you didn't get to do that.
Yeah, well, I had to have a camera with me.
That's right. But at least you have your memories, and it's so wonderful that Jim has put them down. And because all of this little information, it's funny how when people are writing books about history, when they go back and they want to look for little details, which really bring a famous person to life. It's little details like this, of little stories that are often useful to really make a person understand a famous personality. I'm going to take a short break. We have a quick message, and then we'll come right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Tis the season to be reading. Shopping for a gift that will touch someone's heart? There's nothing like a book. A heartwarming book for a child. A mystery for your favorite aunt. A book about military history for your dad. You can find these and hundreds of best-selling books at Haslam's at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. It's a fantastic place to find gifts that shows you put some time and thought into it. For the cooks in your life, there are marvelous cookbooks. For those who dream of traveling, there are gorgeous books of photographs. You can find these and more at Haslam's, the best bookstore in Florida with over 300,000 books. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, located at 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. They're even open on Sundays from noon to 5.
5,000 years of Chinese music and dance in one night, declared the New York Times. Shenyun Performing Arts will take you on an extraordinary journey from ancient dynasties to the modern day. Experience the wonder of authentic Chinese culture. Experience Shenyun. Coming to the Mahaffey Theater, January 12th and 13th. Tickets at shenyun.com or call 888-974-3698.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angel Wolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tantalk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, James McGee, who has written a book called I Know Stuff, Don't Ask, I'll Tell. Ed, are you in the control room there? Do you have a little song for me?
I hear the cottonwoods whispering above. Tammy, Tammy, Tammy's in love. The old hootie.
Of course, that is Debbie Reynolds, and that is one of my favorite songs. As a matter of fact, I've always been such a great admirer that I actually wrote a movie for her called The Sunshine Pilot, and we're hoping to do it, although it's getting we had some delays because of the financial crisis back in 2008. But it's a movie that was written for her, and we had the great pleasure of course, meeting her. And I know that you also, I have here with me the subject of Jim McGee's book, Good Time Charlie, who was a taxi driver. And Charlie, I know that you met Debbie Reynolds, and tell us about your encounter with her.
Oh, yes. I picked her up at Caesar's Palace. She was with two gentlemen that were, like, escorting her. And she just went across the street to the MGM Grand. And when we got there, I was telling her that my father took me to see the movie Tammy, and I said, I never forgot it, and I just loved the song. And I said, my father just loves you, and I just love you. All those guys, especially when we were younger fellows, you know, we were all in love with Debbie Reynolds. And she thought that was so cute that she had a beer glass, and empty, because she drank it. And she put her some extra lipstick on. She kissed one side of the glass, and she said, this is for your father. And she turned it around and kissed the other side and said, this is for you. And she gave me they paid me the fare and a tip.
Yeah.
But she also gave me the glass with her lip impressions on it for my father and myself. I thought that was really sweet of her.
Well, that's what she is. I mean, she is a sweet and giving person. And so that's a wonderful memory of her. So while Las Vegas, of course, was a big place for celebrities, and again, in those days, they could take cabs, and they didn't have to have all this entourage surrounding them and pushing everyone out of the way. So it was fun for you. Who else did you meet while you were in Las Vegas?
Oh, let's see. Who else did I have in my cab? It was Roger Miller.
Jim Brown.
And besides Roger Miller, the singer, Jim Brown, the football player turned actor.
Oh, wow.
And I spoke with Jim Brown quite a while. I was telling him that I said, you know, we have something in common. Jim Brown looked at me and said, what's that? And I says, well, when you were playing football, I says, you were never late, you never missed a game, and you never left early. And I said, I was never late. I never missed a home game he played in Cleveland. And I said, I never left early either. And he got a kick out of that. And then he explained to me why he was in Las Vegas. This was at the airport. I had met him while I was in the cab line. And he said he was going to the Stardust every weekend for the next 6 months behind the betting window, but not to take action, but to just answer special line, just answers questions about sports. And people would get in line, and he'd answer their questions, anything they wanted to talk about in the sports world. And that was his little job there.
Ah.
He just, did it for entertainment.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. Of course, he's a fantastic. I love him as an actor. I think he always did a great job in all the movies.
He was not bad. He was pretty good.
He's pretty good. You didn't expect him to be so good, but I thought he was always very, very good. So when you were in Las Vegas, that's where you met Red Fox?
Yes. It was a casino outside of Las Vegas on Boulder Highway called Samson Casino. And I ran into Red Fox. He also played Las Vegas, And I just started to talk to him, and I said, hey, Mr. Fox, I remember you when you had red hair, And he looked at me, and he said, where is this? And I said, in Cleveland, Leo's Casino. He says, yes, because he remembered it's a nightclub in Cleveland, And we start talking about that and laughing, and we got to became pretty good friends, and we both played keno together as partners, because in the game keno, a lot of people will play 40, 50 numbers, and me and Red Fox knew better. We only played four numbers, two groups of two, and four numbers altogether, but he played it the same way I did. So me and Red Fox became partners. Every Tuesday and Thursday, we meet at the Samstown Casino and play Keno together. And if either one of us won, we split it. If he won, he split it with me. If I won, I split it with him.
Oh, that's good.
We did that for quite some time, too.
Well, I never knew that was a secret key. I could never figure out Keno. I always see so many people there, but I never could figure it out. Of course, that was quite a few years ago. Have you been back to Vegas
No.
Recently?
No, I haven't. Not recently, no.
It's a changed place.
Oh, I just from watching it on TV, it certainly is a lot different from when I was there. Yeah.
And again, I don't even know if they have taxis anymore. They probably have Ubers, right? So when you, Jim, when you were writing this, were you ever like... Did you ever sort of think of just using it as part of a in addition to his actual stories? Did you ever think of taking it and making a novel out of it?
No.
Haven't done that yet.
This was like when I finished with the stories, I just felt, you know, gut feeling.
This is
it.
And of course, in the book, you're always called the guy from Brooklyn.
The guy from Brooklyn.
The guy from Brooklyn.
Which I wrote a sequel to called The Guy from Brooklyn, which is all about me and all about Brooklyn. I have all my illustrations of, you know, like Coney Island, Nathan's, and Downtown Juniors.
So you were born in Brooklyn?
No.
No?
I was Connecticut, but I grew up from about 12 years old in Brooklyn. It was a culture clash, believe me. When I came from Connecticut, I said, Kiro, can you hear me, a banana? And they laughed at me. Now I got the Brooklynese in me.
That's why I thought you were born there, because I know quite a few people from Brooklyn.
But I grew up with a good bunch of people, really, back then, really good bunch. And I've seen Brooklyn bus, train, walking, driving. I had a scooter for 5 years, and everything. You know, I know Brooklyn, you know. That's why I wrote the book, you know what I mean? And celebrities, a couple of them in my neighborhood. Frank Serpico was in my precinct, you know, have you ever heard of him?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And Bobby Fischer played his first chess game in the Grand Army Plaza Library. He was 13. Fantastic game. And then I played softball with Joey Pepitone's two younger brothers, Vinny and Billy. And I saw him down the corner, gassing up at Mobile before he was going to a Yankee game. You know, he was the first baseman for the Yankees, pretty big celebrity. You know, but I never talked to him personally. I just knew him. You know,
Well, in those days, Brooklyn was a great place to grow up.
Oh yeah, no, seriously, Ebbets Field. You know, the Dodgers. Uh-huh. And matter of fact, I put in the book the way the Dodgers got their name was they were trying to stay out of the way of these the electric buses or whatever,
the elevated?
No, I mean they're buses, but they run on the electricity. And
they're
dodging cars. Them out in the street, and that's how they got the name Dodgers. Huh. That's where it came from.
Street cars, you mean? Electric street cars, you mean?
Yeah, street cars. I never was on one of them, but I mean, they were being phased out right around the time that I got into Brooklyn. But if you want to know about old Brooklyn, then The Guy from Brooklyn, that's the name of the book.
Okay, well, of course, again, have you been back to Brooklyn lately?
I go back for reunions, high school. I'm going back next year for my college 50th anniversary. Oh. I mean, reunion.
Anniversary. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, St. Francis, downtown Brooklyn. So I'll be up there in May, you know. And it'll be good, you know, nostalgia trip.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when I know that you've also... tell me about Telly Savalas, because he's always been one of my favorite ones, and I know, Charlie, that you met Telly Savalas.
Oh, really? Him? Yeah. It was at the Sheraton Universal Hotel at a bar on the top floor in Universal City, and I kind of like hung out there on my days off, and I ran into Telly Savalas, and that's where I met him there. He was always there. We'd be just having a few drinks and, you know, watching the sports on TV there. And one time, my mother and father came to visit me, and I introduced him to Telly Savalas. And he gave my mother a kiss on the cheek, and he just said, "Hello, darling," you know. And my mother's face turned red. She was blushing, and my father just had to crack a big smile because he thought that was so funny, you know, my mother blushing at her age, you know. It was really, really something. And he used to always want to go jogging, and I told him, I said, I'm just going to sit here and have a drink. I don't jog, you know. But he did. Every morning he'd be out jogging. It's for the exercise, I guess. And I did introduce him to a friend of mine, Tony, that was going to be the boxer, but took him out to Hollywood to... He was going to be an actor. I did get him into on a set with James Garner, and I introduced Telly Savalas to Tony. And he finally got a jogging partner, because I wouldn't do it. But he was quite a gracious man, you know.
Well, speaking of James Garner, now again, he was one of my favorite actors.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I got my friend Tony. Parts on the set the movie James Garner was making, and it's a long story, but you can read about that in the book, you know?
Uh-huh. And again, James Garner was like John Wayne, a very large man, very tall.
Yes.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Very like they appeared on
quite,
screen.
Quite a ladies' man, James Garner.
Yeah.
All the ladies just loved him, man.
Well, I think so. He's so gorgeous. Now, when you...
He also got Tony into Dolly Parton's movie.
Oh, yeah.
They were filming The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, that's a funny movie.
Yeah. And I got... Well, Tony was on the set there, but we kind of crashed that one.
Yeah, he snuck in, and the director figured it out because he didn't have the makeup on.
He saw Tony didn't have any lip wax on or powder, and he kind of like, we were asked to leave. Dolly Parton got a kick out of that, because we had met her previously, and we used to eat lunch in the cafeteria of the studio, yeah. That's where I met Dolly Parton. So we became friends, you know.
Thomas.
And then instead of going through the Screen Actors Guild and the whole bit, Tony just decided to go sit on the set while they were filming. And we were asked to leave, you know. It's kind of funny, really.
Did she's beautiful in person?
Dolly looks just like she does on television. But I didn't realize how small she is.
She's very tiny.
Yeah, I think she was probably maybe 5 feet tall at the most.
So tell me about the Platters and the Four Tops. I know that you met both of them, right?
Oh, yes, in Cleveland, yeah.
About Levi?
Levi Stubbs, yeah. There was a nightclub in Cleveland called Leo's Casino. It wasn't a casino, that was just the name of it. And all the top name entertainment came there, and we had Motown there. Like, they were like almost like local groups. They played there so much, you know, the Miracles and Temptations and all them. And one time I'm at the bar before the show when the Four Tops were playing, and Levi Stubbs, the lead singer, came out of a kind of like a secret door they had there, and led into the bar. And he came and sat right down next to me at the bar. And I said, I know who you are. You're Levi Stubbs. And he was like shocked that I knew his whole name. And I says, you're with the group. You're the lead singer. And he was kind of like, you know, I'm just trying to get a drink here before the show, you know. So he offered to buy me a drink. And I said, I'll tell you what, Mr. Stubbs, I says, let me buy you a drink, you know. And we just started talking. And I bought him a couple of drinks, because I figured, these stars, people probably expect them to be buying them drinks, and they're rich, and all that.
Yeah.
Let me buy this guy a drink, you know. And that was pretty cool. And I asked him, I said, you ever get tired of being on the road, because, you know, they were on the road so much. Excuse me. And he said, "No, Wesley, it's a groove." That was a saying at that time, you know.
Yeah, he was trying to stay incognito. He had that sweater on.
Yes, he had a cardigan sweater on. He looked like somebody just came in from London, you know. Impeccably dressed, but like I said, looked like a, you know, dressed British. And it was not, you couldn't tell that it was him, because, you know, he kind of just fit right in at the end of the bar. And then he goes back into the door, comes out with a suit and tie on, of course, with the four tops, and put on a heck of a show, I'll tell you that. That's when they first came out with that song, Baby, I Need Your Lovin'.
Oh, wow.
It just came out, and that's when I went to see them at the nightclub.
Still, I think that's still one of the top songs played on the radio.
Yeah. And the Platters, it was another club in Cleveland. I saw the Platters, and actually, after the show was over, we took the wrong elevator. We mistakenly took a freight elevator, thinking it was the elevator we were supposed to take down from the nightclub. It was a floor up, and the Platters got in the same elevator as we did, because that's a elevator they're supposed to take. And that was funny, because we're all in here, "Well, thanks, fellas, that was a real good show." So we had a 30-second conversation with the Platters going down one flight in the elevator. But that's how we got to meet them, talk to them, because we took the wrong elevator. After the show,
it's fun how life plays little tricks on you, and Things turn out nicely. So, when you do you two go around doing tours selling your book, or
no,
have you done that?
Not yet.
You haven't done that at all?
No.
Yeah.
But I told him he's got to come along and help me out. I'm going to buy him a taxi hat.
Oh, good idea. Good idea. Yeah. Well, you have a nice one in this illustration on the cover. That's yeah. You have to do that. They have a. You know, we have book festivals, book signings here, and quite often in the Tampa Bay area. And you guys should go out there and join in, because it's lots of fun. We had just recently the Tampa Bay Reading Fest and Tampa Bay Times Reading Fest out at St. Petersburg College. And you know, you find some of these events to attend. It's great for writers, and of course, as I said, not many writers are able to bring the subject with them, and so people like that. People like to be able to.
Yeah, I kid him. I tell him, "You have to refer to me as your creator now."
Oh, that's it. Absolutely. But it would be a nice thing to do, to get out there and promote your books at these different festivals. There are quite a few. So you moved to Florida and became a taxi driver here too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually owned a couple of cabs.
Ah, okay, so.
But I also drove them.
Uh-huh.
I had drivers that drove my cabs, but I drove a shift myself.
Uh-huh. But, of course, we do get quite a few celebrities here in the area, but, of course, in here in Clearwater area, a lot of our celebrities are very, very, very camera shy. You don't, and they, I don't think they take cabs. You know, we have a few very few big ones who have beach houses up here along the way, but I think you don't get too many famous people. Have you gotten any famous people here? In?
No, I don't believe so. You're right. They are incognito.
Yeah, they really are.
And they
here.
All have personal assistants.
And
chauffeurs, you know.
Yeah, nowadays, and or they do like John Wayne. Quite a few of them actually have old cars that, you know, they drive, and you don't know. I mean, you expect them to be driving a Maserati or something, mm-hmm. but they're not actually driving. It's the non-famous people who are driving the Maseratis and the famous people who are driving old, battered up SUVs, so that people don't
get the Pavarotti after them.
Yeah, exactly, because, of course, you know, we had quite a few very famous people on the beach, but they don't want anyone to know where they are. And of course, we have Ryan Howard's house here. Have you seen Ryan Howard's house?
No, I haven't.
No, the Philly.
John Travolta.
Yeah.
He's got a house.
Yeah. So, so we do have some famous people, but I think they're going in less public transportation nowadays than they used to.
True.
So when you, I save sort of the best for last because I really, one of the actresses that you met is, of course, so beloved by everybody and so wonderful. And she's still as gorgeous. I saw her recently on a television show, and she was still so beautiful. And that, of course, is Sophia Loren. So tell us about Sophia Loren, because, you know, it's not many people get an opportunity to get actually up close and personal with her. So tell us about Sophia Loren.
What a wonderful lady. I was at the bar at the Sheraton Universal, and Sophia Loren and her husband walked in there with a small entourage, and she sat right down at the bar right next to me, and I turned around and looked at her, and I saw her husband, Carlo Ponti, and I said, "Oh my, I know who you are." And she said, "Oh really, who am I?" And I said, "Well, you're Mrs. Sophia Ponti. And this is your husband, Mr. Carlo Ponti. I recognized both of you when you walked in." And she said, Carlo, this nice young gentleman just called me Mrs. Ponti." And she says, "No one's ever called me that. Never, ever." And she got such a charge out of it. I didn't know why, but she did. And her husband came up to me and he says, "Listen, I have some business to take care of with some people. And can you look after my wife for a while and keep her company?" And I said, I'd be more than happy.
Yeah, I have a feeling that was no problem.
Yeah, and for a couple hours we were just sitting, and me and Sophia Loren were drinking together, having some drinks. And we had a great, wonderful conversation. She's so very personable, and she's asking me about my family, how many brothers and sisters I have, or where my family originate from, my nationalities we were talking about, and all this, you know. And told her my mother was Irish, my parents were from Trieste, Italy, but their blood was Slovenian. And she was telling me, "Well, yeah, I know, of course I know where Slovenia is, and Trieste is Italy, you know."
Yeah.
And we just went, it was like two solid hours of her just, she was terribly interested in just everything about a person's life, you know. And I said, "What a wonderful lady, you know?" And that was quite an experience, to be sitting and having drinks and talking with Sophia Loren for such a long time.
Well, that's what I said so often, you know, the more famous they are, the more gracious they are, and thoughtful and kind. And generous with their time.
She sure was, too. You're right about that, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so you would think that maybe somebody like that would be a little, you know, aloof, but it's just exactly like you said.
That's exactly.
Very, very kind and gracious, you know, and willing to give you their time, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I hate when people make snap judgments. They'll say, "Oh, he's famous, so, you know, he's probably snooty or he's probably stuck up." And as I said, I found it's exact opposite. And just like that with Sophia Loren, such a delightful person, and so lovely to see her still active.
Yes, she is. And she said, "I just heard her on the radio yesterday, and a little interview, and they asked her about retiring. She says, it's not in the cards. She says, there's no such thing for me. I'll never, ever retire."
Well, exactly. That's exactly what I said to Jim earlier, that it's so good that you had a career. Well, you had several careers along the way. I forgot to mention that you were also, and I wanted to mention that you were a U.S. Naval officer.
Off Vietnam.
Off Vietnam.
Helicopter carrier,
the USS Okinawa. Now,
I'm writing a book about that right now.
You're writing that book now.
About my experiences aboard my ship.
Well, that should be fascinating.
Years. Yeah, and I think it's interesting.
That was right in the midst of the Vietnam War?
68, 69,
70. And so, of course, that's where all the helicopters took off.
We did what they call vertical envelopment. We made two trips up the China Sea right off Hanoi and dropped off Marines. They call that vertical envelopment.
Uh-huh.
And they drop them off, and then the helicopters come back. You turn the ship into the wind. They land, and you get out of there fast.
Real fast.
Luckily, it wasn't like Korea. It was, we didn't have a problem with MiGs or anything like that. They probably didn't even know we were there, which was good.
Very good, yes. Yeah, you did. I think the F-105s kept whatever Air Force they had busy up north they didn't get down to you. But that should be a fascinating book. That's the book you're working on now?
I'm up to chapter 10 now, and it looks really good. I've split the book between the storyline and the technology that's involved, and you can either just read the storyline, the chapters, or you can read the in-between, the technology, but you can skip over it. It's kind of based on what Melville did with Moby Dick. Every second chapter was about whaling. So if you don't want to read the technology, just skip over it and stay with the storyline.
That's a good idea. Exactly. That's a great idea. Yeah. So do you write every day?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Are you a disciplined writer?
I'm an early riser. I get about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm on the computer, and then it just keeps, hours.
Yeah.
And then I got to take a break. I mean, it's like, enough.
Well, it's very important that you...
I'm good at research. That's the key to my book.
Uh-huh.
I do a lot of research for other people. I mean, you read my books, you're going to get my research. I save you the time, and I'm good. I'm good at it.
So when you are doing your research, you really how do you do your work?
I Google a lot. And the thing is, you got to ask the right question.
Uh-huh.
I have what they call a mother load. I hit something. I go, wow, this is it. I need this information. I print it out and I study it and read it. It's like a gold mine. You hit. There's the load, your mother load, and it's like, wow, this is excellent. And you just got to keep looking around until you ask the right question, until you get that material. And you look at it and you go, yeah, that's it.
What I wanted to mention that you have a website, and it's called www.littrivia, like literature, L-I-T, and then the word trivia, littrivia.com. And it's a very interesting website because you've got your books listed there. Right at the top, you have, of course, Good Time Charlie's book that's making him famous. Do people buy you drinks now when you go to a bar, huh? Do you say?
What he told me after I finished the book, I didn't know my life was that important.
Oh, these things are important. It's amazing. I do a lot of research on historical, like England in the 1800s, and I appreciate all the books that people wrote, no matter what they wrote. So often, even if it's just one little tidbit from a book that brings that era to life, because you never know. And so it's really great that you've put all of this down, and I'm very glad that you've turned Good Time Charlie here into a little bit of a famous character. And you both have your t-shirts on. I know stuff, and I know stuff too, so you can go in and tell everybody your stories. Now, on your website, which is, again, www.littrivia.com, people can see all of your books, or most of them, I think.
And if they want to buy them, it'll take them right to Amazon. They can
You click
and,
on.
And they can download Kindles. It's cheaper. And then I actually have Apple apps and I have the Android apps of my books.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, you have to be very versatile nowadays with this. You have to have sort of all formats, because more and more people, are reading books online. Now, as I said, you cover quite a few different subjects, and I know that you've done stories about the different romantic period, the Victorian period. So you find all of these all of these different eras.
I spent 25 years on that book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the one on law, legal terms, and I spent 25 years in the court system, New York State court system. So, I taught promotion exams. So civil, criminal, family law, and penal law, I'm very familiar with. And that's an interesting book, legal terms.
Well, that's and it's a very useful book. So I encourage everyone to have a look at Jim McGee's website and find there's bound to be a book that will interest you. And I love trivia books, of course. So I really Those
American history, world history. Those are the trivia books. Actually, I wrote a Rock and Roll Review, and I wrote Motown, female groups, and the British Invasion. They're on there too. Mm-hmm.
Great.
And there's a lot of trivia involved with that. A lot of trivia.
Yeah, those are fun books to have and to read. And so I encourage everyone to take a trip over to Lit Trivia and get one of these books. And we look forward to your 31st book coming out. And Jim is a great example of what to do when you retire, that you don't have to just sit around and do nothing. There are stories to be told, and whether it's your, you might not think that your life is so interesting, but find somebody like Good Time Charlie to tell you stories. And see, Good Time Charlie didn't probably feel like writing them down himself, but now Jim has done it for him, and it's a great thing. So I encourage everyone to read, and remember that as I always tell everybody, that there is. The reason I named this Joy on Paper is there, you get such a joy when you write. It doesn't matter what you write. You can write a book about trivia. You can write a book of stories that you collect from friends and neighbors or family members. You can write a cookbook. You can write a book about any little subject. Pick a subject, perhaps, that you don't even know about, and do the research. And then write a book. And it gives you such a feeling of joy to get the words down on paper. And, of course, you have to rewrite them and review them. And, it doesn't always work out the first time. And even the most famous writers rewrite their books sometimes many, many times. So get out there and, think about what you want to do and write a book. It's wonderful nowadays. It's so easy. You can get published. Last week, I had the founder of Smashwords, who is the largest independent publisher, Kindle books and e-books. So you can do it too, and it gives you a feeling of joy, a feeling of accomplishment, and you'll be proud of yourself. And you can save stories. If nothing more, write your own story, and write a story that your family can hold and hold in their hand and keep, and that will be passed down through the generations. So I want to encourage everyone to write, and I want to thank Jim. Thank you for joining me today. And Charlie, thank you for joining me today. It was wonderful to hear your stories.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, this is Patsy with a Z wishing everyone a great week. And, of course, I want to thank Big Ed in the control room. And Happy New Year to everybody. Remember, one of the joys in life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. And have a great week.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.
It's time for